Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFBA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We're going to talk college football this morning. Corey Roberts here with the Fredericksburg Regional Alliance. Scott Majowski is the Commissioner of Revenue in Stafford. And those titles, for now, we throw them aside. And I talk sports with a couple of real good friends. Good morning. Good to have you guys here. Scott represents West Virginia University.
Good morning, Ted.
And Curry's a Virginia Tech guy.
Well, I noticed that you covered the couch out front before Scott got here, so that was a good decision on your part.
I wish there was a need to burn a couch, but after Saturday,
we often worry about
laid on my couch and cried instead of burned it.
We're going to talk a lot about just college sports and all. Do you remember when did you get interested in college football? And was it always were you always a Virginia Tech guy?
Yeah, I'm really going to give away my age. The first time I went to a college football game, it was when Tech used to play VMI in Roanoke. And the Coors would come down on Thanksgiving Day, and there'd be a parade in Roanoke, and they'd go out to Victory Stadium. And I was probably six or seven years old.
Somebody was telling me about that. I had forgotten that. When my daughter went to VMI, I had heard about it. Well, that was a big deal on Thanksgiving.
It was a big deal, and it was actually where Tech got the Gobblers as a nickname. It didn't have anything to do with turkeys. The Coors went into a cafeteria in Roanoke and basically ate everything. And the guy said, "What a bunch of gobblers those guys are!" And so that's where that came from.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Scott, when did you get interested in college football?
Well, growing up here in the heart of ACC country at the time, I'd watch ACC sports every Saturday. I'd watch football and basketball all throughout the season. So I grew up a sports fanatic, always loved college. Oddly enough, when I'd go visit my grandparents in western Pennsylvania, it was near Pitt. So I actually grew up a Pitt fan because I'd go up there and watch Dan Marino play on TV, and Pitt had a great team then. But once I got to WVU, I quickly developed a hatred for Pitt and realized the error of my ways. I love every sport, whether it's car racing, baseball. And back then, you didn't have a lot of options on TV.
No.
So it was either watch cartoons or watch sporting events, and I opted for sporting events.
Because I give my age away, too. I mean, I grew up in Michigan and grew up a Michigan fan, University of Michigan fan. And in those days, like the way the contracts were, teams could only be on over a two-year period like five times. And it might have been a three-year period. So you just didn't have the choice of games. You didn't see your team play very often.
Right. Yeah. Was Johnny Majors the coach at Pitt when Dan Marino was there?
No. He had left for Tennessee then. It was Faze Fazio, I think.
I think you're right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, it was. It was totally different. You didn't have all the games. Now you can see your can see your team somewhere.
Yeah, you won't miss a game. It used to be a huge. Yeah, it used to have to be on national TV to watch your team, and that didn't happen very often. Right. But when it did, it was a big deal.
Yeah. So Curry, you went to Virginia Tech. So you became when you went to Tech. I guess is that when that solidified it for you.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't have a choice but to go to Tech.
Ironically, I didn't have a choice but to go to West Virginia because nobody else would take me.
Well, that wasn't my problem. My problem was I got a full scholarship. My parents said, "That's where you're going." So that's how I ended up at Tech. But it's a great experience. You know, I love the school, love the place, love the culture, love the atmosphere. When I was there, we were a basketball school. I don't know that I was there in the late 70s, and we won the old Metro Conference, went to the NCAAs two or three times. And I can't remember if we won 10 games cumulative the 4 years I was at Tech. I think I had to stay one extra quarter to get a class. We were on a quarter system back then. So I think it was the fall of 80 was the first time we had beaten UVA in 6 years, 7 years, kind of the peak of the George Welch era at UVA. And then, gosh, I don't know that we beat UVA again until probably Frank Beamer's fourth season.
And then they've lost like one time since then. So
that's a sad story. It's interesting. It's sort of the up and down of the football programs at the two universities. You know, you take UVA, and prior to George Welch, you have to go all the way back to the late 40s, early 50s, when Bill Dudley was there. Tech was pretty good in spots in the 50s in the old Southern Conference. And into the sort of mid-60s when Jerry Claiborne was there, and then we just sort of fell off a cliff and didn't really recover. But we recovered some under Bill Dooley in sort of 80 to 86, I guess, and then got in a world of trouble by letting him also be the athletic director. And that was a mistake.
West Virginia almost played for a national championship.
Well, in 88, we did. We played Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. It was, I believe, 1-2 then. And, of course, in pure West Virginia fashion, our star quarterback, Major Harris, hit the wrist on his throwing arm in the first quarter. So he was useless in that game, and that was the closest we came. I was there in 93. We went undefeated. Lost out on a national title shot to Florida State. That was Bobby Bowden's first national title. And then in 07, all we had to do was beat a 4-7 Pitt team.
I'll never forget that game.
And we'd have played Ohio State, and we end up choking on the game and losing. So we've had three good shots in the past, you know, the past 30, 40 years at a national title, and came up short on all of them.
See, I envy both of you, because I went to a college that didn't have footballs, and we played soccer in the fall, and that was it. So I just I have just always admired in people that have go to, even if the school isn't strong in football, to have a football.
Did you go to the University of Maryland? you said you went to school without a football team. That was my first thought.
That is true. Speaking of Maryland, it's too bad. I regret that Maryland's in the Big Ten, just because you look at we'll get into this, just regionalism, some of the regional games that never happen. It's too bad.
You know, if you talk about the ups and downs, we were talking about it before we came on, just the unpredictability of college football and the product that's out there today. You know, there's just so many variables that come into play anymore, and there's no stability. You know, where you get like the Dave Clawson model at Wake Forest, where, you know, they'll be really bad one year because he's got a bunch of freshmen playing, and then the next 2 years they'll be moderately competitive, and then the fourth year he really jumps up, wins the conference, something like that. Now, we don't know what the win against Florida State means yet, but I don't know that coach succeeds anymore. Let's set Saturday at Vanderbilt aside, because there's a lot to criticize there, the coaching staff. But I think Brett Pry has actually done a pretty good job of balancing. You know, he plugs a few holes through the portal with some good kids, often kids who his coaches had tried to recruit when they were somewhere else, so they know the kid. Some with Virginia ties, which means they're sort of coming back home. And then he's back to recruiting the state. And I think that is a good way to build a program. I just think he's, you know, in-game coaching is still a little bit of a challenge, I think, for us.
You happy with your coach at West Virginia?
I don't know. I think by and large he's done a good job. He's in his sixth season now. Did win 9 games last year, but they looked awful against Penn State. They just didn't show up that first week, and I don't quite know how that happens. But we were talking about the on the field product. Neither team looked good. I know Penn State is a national title contender, but they looked sloppy. They looked bad. No, I know it's the first game of the season, but just as a general rule, I don't think the product that we're getting on the field, because of all these recent changes, is very good. You know, when you're filling your roster full of new players every year and at key positions, we have two brand new cornerbacks. You can't build a defense. You can't get into complex schemes when you're constantly replacing these players, and you've almost got to dumb it down to its lowest common denominator every year. And I think it's manifesting itself in a poor product on the field.
It's maybe the only time this year I can say it, but Virginia won on Saturday, so they're 1-0. You guys are 0-1. Go Hoos.
Well, the way to look at that is UVA won a game it should win.
Yeah.
West Virginia, by all regards, not throwing rocks here, they lost a game they probably should lose. We're the ones that lost a game we should have won.
Yeah.
And it was a frustrating game to watch because I don't think necessarily we got beat physically. I think we got beat mentally. And we were talking about it before the show. I knew we were in trouble this week when I hadn't paid much attention to Vanderbilt, but when I learned that Jerry Kill was there helping with their offense, who Justin Fuente brought in for one season, and he did a marvelous job at Tech for one season, and then he went down to New Mexico State and recruited this quarterback who's got just the greatest name, Diego Pavia. You know, he sounds like a guy who was in Billy the Kid's gang, right? I mean, so he's in New Mexico, and it's and he did, frankly, what we've oftentimes had trouble with. He's a sandlot kind of quarterback.
Yeah,
you know, he just makes plays when there doesn't look to be plays. Now, they dropped the ball five times, and we didn't recover one of them. You know, a couple of those bounces different. It probably would have been a different outcome. But frankly, I don't know that Vanderbilt's all that good. And we'll see, you know, when they get in the SEC schedule, but it also made it very unpredictable, because the head coach at Vanderbilt went back to coaching the defense, which was his background. He brought in Jerry Kill on offense. I don't know that we knew what to prepare for, and it showed.
Yeah.
And then couldn't pivot fast enough.
Losing to a school like Vanderbilt just hurts. I mean, it's bad enough for them to beat you athletically, but if they're also smarter than you are, like that just... These are the kids that you should be giving wedgies and swirlies to. Like, you don't lose a football game.
That's such a target-rich environment for somebody who went to West Virginia. I don't know what to do with that. Okay,
boy, I just
don't.
I've been waiting for that moment. Waiting for that moment this morning. Scott Majewski, Curry Roberts here. We're talking college football more on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
We're talking college football this morning with Scott Majewski and Curry Roberts. We talk sports for once. We're not talking about some of the heavier regional topics that we usually do. Most memorable game you've seen, and you didn't have to see it in person, but just is there a memorable game? And I guess it doesn't even have to be either Tech or West Virginia, but
Most memorable game there are two. One's a good memory, and one's just a memory. Let's start with just the memory. The first time I went to watch Tech play an away game, I got on a bus in Roanoke and went to Morgantown. And that was when Bobby Bowden was still at West Virginia, and Danny Buggs was an All-American receiver.
Okay.
And that was an old Mountaineer field, which if you want to look up the definition of a pit, that was a pit, and it was a loud pit. I just hadn't seen a crowd like that. Now, Tech crowds today sort of are like that.
Yeah.
But West Virginia had all of the makings of a big-time program then, and Bobby Bowden did a great job there. I guess, Scott, it's pretty painful that you lost out a chance to play a national championship to Bobby Bowden. That must have really hurt.
It did hurt.
And then I think the most memorable game was Tech beating LSU when Nick Saban was at LSU, and that game was in Blacksburg.
Oh, I remember
that. And it
that.
Was before, yeah, before he went to Alabama.
That was like a Labor Day weekend game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an early game. And I went to the Sugar Bowl when we beat Texas, and that was a big game.
Yeah.
Which I thought we had a pretty good chance of beating them. actually. Nobody else did, but in terms of the point spread and that sort of stuff. But that was a really good team, both physically and mentally. And it was a smart team, and they knew how to win that game.
Yeah, mine, I think, would actually be a Virginia-Clemson game in 1990.
That's the first time they beat the first time UVA beat them.
Yeah, it was like in 25 years. First time in 25 years. And my dad would listen to this radio station when he was working up north. And I think he was their only listener. And they would give away UVA tickets every week if you answered a trivia question. So for that year, he had basically UVA season tickets. Because he was the only one who was calling in for the trivia question. So he won for that game.
That's how they still give away season tickets at UVA.
Exactly.
Maybe they didn't talk so much UVA football, people would listen. So he won tickets for that game, and we went down there, and it was fantastic.
I remember listening to that game.
And then other than that, it was in 93 when we had an undefeated season. We were playing Miami at home, number 4 Miami at home. And that was just an unbelievable atmosphere. We ended up winning that game and going on to an undefeated season.
Yeah, that was the sort of Big East title game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the first or second season
of the Big East.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an amazing atmosphere.
When you talk about atmospheres, there's nothing that beats Tech's. It pains me to say it. But, you know, Enter Sandman.
Where's your son go to school?
And everything. I know. He would be very disappointed in these slights. And my wife went to Virginia Tech. It is a fan.
Again, when I was there in the 70s, that's what Castle Coliseum was like.
Hmm.
We took, I don't remember if it was one or two overtimes, but the year Marquette won the national title, Al McGuire was still the coach at Marquette. And the students then, it was a very, very different setup because they didn't have as many basketball season ticket holders as they do today. And the students made up about half to two-thirds of the arena. And we'd be on one side facing the opposing team's bench. And so when they would introduce them, we'd all read newspapers.
Yeah. I remember seeing that on TV.
Yeah. So it was what basically happened is Frank Beamer managed to get enough excitement that the atmosphere that used to be in Castle migrated its way out to Lane Stadium. And it's obviously it is one of the best atmospheres in college football. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not sure we're getting the teams that the fans deserve for the amount of support that Virginia Tech has provided.
I always wonder, what is the origin of the Enter Sandman entrance? Because I painfully admit that's really cool.
You know, I don't really know.
Yeah.
And I know you all know my wife, Irene. She thinks Metallica owes us royalties.
For keeping them
relevant all these years. And now there's a merchandise deal that Tech has signed with them. So.
Yes, no, I see them, and when a band gets old, it's sometimes not pretty, but they've become they've remained relevant thanks to Virginia Tech football.
Well, let's not get carried away, Ted. In part because of Virginia Tech football.
Well, you know, for the alternative fight song for West Virginia is a song that not one of the geographic things mentioned is actually in West Virginia.
We didn't write that song.
Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River.
That's true.
Nowhere near West Virginia.
One of the greatest post-game celebrations in all of college sports, which actually started as a way to keep fans off the field. We were getting to the point where we were rushing the field every time we won a game, and it was causing a problem. So they artificially created that tradition about 20 years ago to keep people in the seats, and it's worked.
Well, UVA just figured out a different way to do it.
Don't win games. That works, too.
Yeah, people leave by the time.
Yeah. They're all gone.
But it's great for traffic. I never have a traffic problem getting in and out of Charlottesville on a football Saturday. I didn't realize, and this was a few years ago, when the year that Virginia Tech and West Virginia, I think they opened the season up at FedEx Field, mm-hmm. And Scott and I were texting during that game, and I realized, I mean, Virginia Tech, I think, won that game.
Yes,
it was a controversial thing. Yes. But I did not realize that
it
there was
controversial.
It was, yes. There were, yes. Yes.
I did not realize.
Controversial to who?
Anybody with eyes.
Well, we were talking about the quality of the product. I mean, if you watch, and I'm serious now. This is no joke. That was an ACC crew in Nashville. And they made some really bad calls both ways.
Yeah.
And you read all the time, they can't recruit enough high school officials anymore. I wonder how much that has also played into college football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our game was horribly officiated. Yeah. And like you said, it kind of went both ways. Since we lost, it feels like it went more Penn State's way. But it was a horribly officiated game. So I wonder if that's, you know, the whole, I talked about the product being watered down earlier. It's from beginning to end. It doesn't have the same level that it did. Like
it's not as sharp.
No. I think a Penn State team from the 80s or 90s would absolutely crush this Penn State team today. They just played better, tighter football back then.
No.
I wonder if they've taken too much discipline. Is it because of the transfer portal? You can't discipline kids anymore.
You hurt somebody's feelings, and they're gonna leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. I played some high school football, and today, not only would those coaches have been fired, social services would have probably had them arrested for looking at it, but. We paid attention.
Yeah.
We did what they told us to do, and more times than not, we were successful.
And there's weird times. I haven't studied the times the transfer portals open, but to me, it's weird. It's open during spring practice.
Right.
So we literally had an all-conference lineman come to practice on Monday, not show up Tuesday. By Wednesday, he's announcing he's going to the University of Miami.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody really knows why. Sure, money had something to do with it, but yeah, how do you build a team when you don't even know who's showing up literally from one day to the next?
Yeah. Scott Miowski, Curry Roberts here. We're talking college football. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is almost 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Sorry.
We're talking college football this morning. Curry Roberts and Scott Mayowski here. Curry, in his day job, when he's not talking college football, it's with the Fredericksburg Regional Alliance, and Scott is the Commissioner of Revenue in Stafford, but we're not talking about any of that stuff. So we were talking about officiating, and you told me you had an officiating story to share with us.
Yeah. Now I'm going to draw a blank on his name. Civil War history professor at Tech. Somebody will call in and remember.
Was that Roberts?
Bud Robertson.
Bud Robertson, yeah.
Bud Robertson. It had the most popular class on campus. Everybody took at least one section of Civil War history. And it was taught in a 250-seat auditorium. It was always filled.
Mm-hmm.
Guy was an excellent lecturer. well, he also was an ACC football official.
I didn't know that.
He was for, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years. And a couple of times... you were talking about officiating a minute ago, and poor West Virginia never gets a break. But if there were controversial calls in a Tech game over the weekend, he would get up at the beginning of class and take 5 minutes to explain why it was either the correct call or maybe they ought to go back and look at this. And this was pre-replay.
Yeah.
And it used to be fascinating to listen to him break those down.
Wow.
And then he would go on and still do his traditional lecture. But that was kind of interesting listening to him break down plays from an official standpoint. And not something you would have expected.
No.
Of him.
But a fascinating, to have that perspective to be able to to be able to talk about it. So if you're college football commissioner for a day, Scott, what's a thing or two you would change right now? It sounds like one of the things would be to at least limit the portal in some way, so a player can't. Because you're right, the spring one to me makes no sense, because that happened to a number of schools.
Well, I mean, the very first thing I do is put Virginia Tech on probation. I don't know that. I mean, there's got to be something odd going on down there. So after I get that little bit of housekeeping.
Whoa. Somebody from West Virginia is saying there's something odd in Blacksburg? Honestly, Scott.
After I got that little piece of housekeeping out of the way. They've got to address the NIL and the transfer portal. Yeah. I think the combination of those two things happening at the same time just created chaos. I'd also like to see something done with the conference realignments. It's just been so destructive to college. You mentioned regionalism earlier, and in many cases, it's that is what made college football so great.
It did.
Mm-hmm. And I took my daughter to the Pitt-West Virginia game last year, and, I mean, the atmosphere was just electric. That is obviously our biggest rival. But then I was trying to explain to her the really great thing back in the day is, well, next week it might be Virginia Tech coming in, mm-hmm. and it's going to be the exact same atmosphere. And it might even be better as you win and you keep playing these regional rivals. It just is amazing, and that is gone by the wayside largely, and I think that the networks are realizing that is important to college football. So you're seeing more, you know, we're playing Penn State again, and you see some other rivals that are starting to play. But when they went through a conference realignment 10 or 15 years ago, and you had Maryland and Rutgers ending up in the Big Ten,
yeah.
It just made no sense.
No.
Because then they weren't thinking about rivalries. They were thinking about TV markets. Well, hell, nobody in the New York TV market is watching Rutgers. I don't care if it's within their footprint. And I think they've realized that. So hopefully as these conferences morph, we'll get back to more regionalism. That's what I would really push if I were commissioner.
I know Virginia plays SMU this year. SMU comes to Charlottesville, and I look at that and just think, I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, we go to Stanford.
Yeah, again.
Yeah, actually, we've got the worst travel schedule in the ACC. We go to Stanford, to Miami, and to Boston College. Mm. Wait a minute. That's wrong. Syracuse. It's worse.
Yes,
we go to
right.
Syracuse,
yeah.
Stanford, and Miami, and it is the longest
right.
mileage of any ACC school this year. I wonder if this model is sustainable. I mean, at what point do you break the bank?
Right.
At what point, you know, look at NASCAR.
Right.
I mean, they've had to reduce the size of the Richmond Raceway, and now it's lost its second race of the year. It only mm-hmm. gets one. And it seats, I think, half of what it did at its peak, and it still doesn't sell out. Does it, at some point, this upper echelon of college football just implode, and you have to go back and re-scramble the egg into some other format? I don't know that I'd get rid of the portal, but I think I would limit it quite a bit more. I think a kid ought to have to stay through 2 years before he goes somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You know, the stuff of, well, I didn't get to play this year, so I quit and I'll go somewhere else. I mean, college football wasn't set up to have journeyman players. And maybe I'm just old and traditional, but I heard Joe Theismann speak a couple of years ago at a conference, and he was more worried about the transfer portal than he was NIL money. It was interesting in his perspective of that. And he really was anti the portal. And here's a guy who played pro sports, right? The other thing he did that was this is way off topic, but it was hilarious. It was the conference was in Illinois, and he got up and he asked, "Is anybody here from Cleveland?" You're all sitting there going, "What's he care for?" One poor
right.
soul in the back raised his hand. He said, "I'm from Cleveland." Theismann jumps down off the stage, runs over to him, and he says, "You see this? This is a Super Bowl ring. This will be the only one you ever see."
Oh, wow. speaking of that, that's a great transition into, because Scott, you talk about this a couple of times that West Virginia's been on the cusp. Virginia Tech played for a national championship, but it's been every once in a while. It just seems like those kinds of stories, and even college basketball, you don't see as much anymore because of some of the things we've talked about. There aren't the opportunities for a Virginia Tech or a West Virginia to play for a national championship.
How often do we just want to watch the Big Ten and SEC play each other for every national title?
Right. Alabama and Georgia are fine, but we
see. Yeah, after that, I mean, what's to watch? And I'm not interested. If West Virginia were playing Arkansas in some, I'd watch that. Going back to Scott's point about regional interest. And it's not that I don't care about SMU, but I don't think about SMU.
Right.
And I think college football is morphing into something it never intended to be. There was a reason why there was never a true national championship game. It's different than basketball.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if we were, got this mythical national title in the 1950s. It mattered that we beat Pitt, or mattered that we beat Penn State or Virginia Tech. That's what mattered. I mean, we've even got a trophy with Virginia Tech when we play them. That's how big these games, because that's what matters. And by the way, Curry, it's safe in a trophy case in Morgantown where it's been since 2021.
2021. Yeah, okay.
That's what matters. Like, who plays for the old Oaken Bucket in the Big Ten? Is it Minnesota and Wisconsin?
Minnesota, Wisconsin.
They're never going to win a national title, but they don't care. They just want to win an old bucket.
The Big Ten
beat their neighbor.
To care about winning a Commonwealth Cup, but there's no winning it.
Stays at 10.
It's kind of like America's Cup. They're just going to rename it.
Finally just put it in the library. Sort of a conversation piece.
A couple years ago, when Virginia Tech did lose in Charlottesville the one time,
and fluke.
My son said we can't find the trophy because we've had it for so long.
Exactly. Yeah, I used to tell a joke about the guy going into the bar with his dog, and in Charlottesville, this Tech guy took his dog into the bar, and the bartender says, "You can't bring a dog in here." And he says, "Well, wait a minute." He said, "The dog will watch the game, the day of the Tech UVA game, and he'll entertain your patrons. When Tech scores, he'll do somersaults down the bar. And when UVA scores, he'll walk on his hind legs. And when Tech wins, he'll do backflips." And so the bartender asks, "Well, what's he do if UVA wins?" "I don't know, the dog's only 12 years old." And so the year we lost, Irene turned to me and she said, "I think your dog died."
You've told me that story before. I hadn't, since it's UVA won, so that addition.
Yeah, the dog died. I had to bury the poor thing.
But those regions, you look at a few years ago, and other than if UVA is not playing Tech, Scott Stadium isn't close to being sold out, but it was when Penn State came a few years ago. All those, whether it's alumnus in the area or people, it's not that far to
come
down here.
Clemson travels well to away games. Mm-hmm. And, when you guys play Carolina in Charlottesville, mm-hmm. there's a good contingent of UNC fans that come. But you're right. I mean, I'm not wild about going to Morgantown again, but I do miss the games that Tech and West Virginia had. It was a good rivalry, and not that far apart. And, a lot of people living on both sides of the line. And the atmospheres were terrific in both places. And what's the atmosphere going to be when, we go to SMU?
Yeah, that's what built college football.
Well, and you, Scott, you've seen it with West Virginia in the Big 12 when you've got Kansas State coming to, you name Oklahoma State.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't care about Kansas State or Oklahoma State. We still talk about the teams we don't play anymore. I hope that's changing a little bit. I know Big 12 has added some East Coast teams, still not the ones that we want, but I don't think we're done with conference realignment.
No.
So I'm holding out hope that we'll get back to that regionalism.
You know, actually, the old Big East was a good conference.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was a fun conference. And one major mistake it made, it was, remember, Penn State was not in the Big Ten when the Big East was formed, and Pitt blocked Penn State from becoming a member of the, talk about missed opportunities.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, that was one of the just great missed opportunities that, and you know, the management of Big East football was left to a bunch of basketball schools and, you know, basketball-only schools. And that's why it ultimately disintegrated, is lack of emphasis on what really turned people on. I think the basketball schools should have just left, and we could have had an all-sports Big East conference, but, you know, that got blocked by Syracuse.
And it was fun.
Yeah.
And I think the Big 12 is going to be a lot like the old Big East this year. This year. There's not one dominant team, with Texas and Oklahoma losing. But, man, is it going to be fun, because it is wide open and every game is going to be close, and it's going to be exciting. So I'm looking forward to that.
But you still lose something on the geography.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think after last night, though, the ACC is safe. For all of Florida State's whining and lawsuits, if you can't win football games and nobody wants you,
they're not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere.
And no. You know, I'm sorry, got a lot of friends at Clemson. South Carolina's never going to let Clemson in the SEC.
Never.
Right? I mean, it's not going to happen. Florida's not going to let Florida State in the SEC. Right? It's just they don't bring anything. I mean, you don't pick up anything, per se.
And it's unfortunate, because the ACC is really teetering right now.
But it's still they want to whine about the revenue, but they also, you know, especially in Florida State's case, they're not lacking for money.
No.
You know, they have a very wealthy alumni base. They sort of remind me of the old adage that the greedy become the needy. And at this point, if that would hasten re-scrambling those back to regional conferences, I wish they would go. If it would force something back to a more regionally sane set of conferences, or at least one or two.
I mean, if they stay and the ACC stays intact, I what makes the most sense to me is some sort of Big 12 ACC merger, where you can keep the West Coast teams playing each other and the East Coast teams playing each other, and then come together in some kind of title game or something. I don't know exactly what it looks like.
Oh, but I like that idea.
Those two conferences have to merge, because they'll always be third and fourth of the Power Four, unless they do something.
And there's not enough money, to be honest. I mean, you're not gonna pick up a bunch. There's no ton more revenue to go get. No. I don't think TV revenue that you can come up with. But that model would make some sense. Minus, this is not a wrench, but minus a Syracuse and Boston College, your geography. They're the outliers of the geography in that conference.
Is it? Yeah. Isn't it odd how Northern football's just vanished?
Yeah. Well, Rutgers takes a run at it every now and then, but you're right. Now, having said that, I fully expect us to lose at Syracuse, because we always lose at Syracuse.
Yeah, that is true.
What I'm finding interesting, moving a little bit away from football, the influx of money that the football schools are generating now in the past 5 or 6 years, you're seeing downstream in the success of other sports. Like, I look at Tech and West Virginia baseball. I don't even know that we had baseball teams 20 years ago, and now both of us have been in the top five in the past 2 years.
I did, because we used to sit on the hill and throw beer cans at your outfielders. When the drinking age was 18,
were they empty, or did he stop and pick them up?
Oh no, we'd have never thrown away full beer. We're not a rich school.
Yeah, I mean,
no, but that is
the
true.
Olympic sports. Like, all of a sudden, all of these schools with football teams They're making huge strides in all these other sports, and I don't know that I like that either. It's changed things. What happens to the JMUs or the other schools who that was their niche? Johns Hopkins at lacrosse.
Yeah.
That was their niche. And now you've got all these football schools coming in and pouring money into these programs. And it's even changing the landscape there.
That's interesting. Quick break. We're going to wrap this up this morning. Good stuff this morning with Scott Mowski and Corey Roberts. On News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Corey Roberts and Scott Mayowski here this morning. This is fun. This is like a local college game day kind of thing. That's why we need to get together and do these kinds of things every now and then. So if we're picking, you know, what's going to happen, I'll say it right now, and you can have it recorded. UVA 12-0 this year. They'll be the
you got one under the belt.
In what sport?
Yeah, maybe they'll start the baseball swimming? Season off.
Swimming, yes, swimming. Lacrosse.
No, if Virginia won six games this year, I'd be just ecstatic and give Tony Elliott a.
Oh, yeah.
Extension and just put a statue up for him. Just win six games. That's how desperate I am.
I'm not touching that.
So what do you realistic? Now, having seen West Virginia on Saturday, and everybody says that the biggest change in a team is from week one to week two.
Boy, it better be. We went into that game with an experienced team and a legit Heisman Trophy candidate, and I've never seen a team shrink on a national stage the way that team did. So I don't know if last year was an anomaly or if they're going to get it together. We'll know more September 15th when we go to Pittsburgh. But I think we're going to end up getting it together, win nine games, and play for the Big 12 championship. I'm still optimistic. I was not this optimistic Saturday as I was laying in the fetal position in Legend Sports Bar watching the disaster unfold. But with a little bit of perspective, I think we're going to get it together and have a really good season.
On the Virginia Tech side.
Did you not watch the Tech game? Would you say you've never seen anybody shrink on a stage before? Look, Tech fans are the most depressed eternal optimists in the world.
Boy, that's a great way to put it.
That was a frustrating game to watch just because most of the errors were mental, not physical. And, you know, I've not been a football coach, and I'm always reluctant to throw rocks at football coaches. I think we win the next two games, which are Marshall and ODU. The game that I think, and you made a comment about Northeastern football and who watches Rutgers. Rutgers is a type of team who typically gives us trouble. You know, it's a classic. They've built basically mm-hmm. Big Ten lines. They're big guys. And if you let them keep the ball, they'll just wear you out. Now, the good news is they're coming to Blacksburg. I think the outcome of our season depends on what happens in that game. And whether we end up, you know, 7-5 or 6-6, I think depends on what happens in that game. Because it gets, you know, after that we got at Miami and we go to Stanford. I didn't watch the Stanford game, so I don't know what's there. But the Rutgers game, I think, is the pivotal game on our schedule.
This has been fun. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Let's do this again. This was fun to not talk about the usual stuff. Corey Roberts, Scott Mayowski, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.